Free Will in the Light of Bhagavan's Teachings by Bart Walton. Author Bart Walton described his first visit to Sri Ramanashramam in the November-December 2020 issue of the Maharishi. Here, he delves further into the subject of free will. I read with interest the feature article in the January-February issue, volume 32, number 1, titled, Our Success is Guaranteed, or Is It? Continuing on this theme, I would like to offer some further thoughts on free will in the light of Bhagavan's teachings. The most universal assumption among human beings, and perhaps the greatest delusion, is the notion that we are independent agents with free will. We support this idea by remembering all the times we are able to do and accomplish exactly what we want. But in the process, we conveniently discount or ignore altogether all the times when we can't do what we want, get what we want, or even think what we want. The main reason why gambling casinos are successful is because people tend to remember the times when they win and forget all the times when they lose. We make the same mistake in assuming that we have free will. If we really investigate our lives, it is clear that our free will only seems to work some of the time. On an equal number of occasions, our efforts are stymied and our plans are thwarted one way or another. So, we have to ask ourselves, does free will only work some of the time? And if so, does it even make sense to speak of free will as something that comes and goes? Let us examine free will from another angle. Consider our breathing. It is happening whether we want it to or not. We can't stop it for more than a minute or two. In a similar way, the events of our lives are unfolding along a trajectory that is not in our control. We don't have any say about being born, the place of our birth, our family of origin, our gender, our genetic makeup, or our physical or psychological constitution, or the length of our lives. And these are just a few of our external circumstances. What about our internal experience? We pretend to have control over our thoughts and feelings. But if we really did, would we ever choose to have an unhappy thought or painful feeling again? One could counter this argument by saying, yes, but look at what I have accomplished. Again, I have to ask ourselves, what part did it really play in making these things happen? If we are honest, we will have to admit that our own efforts play only a small role in a complex web of genetic, social, and environmental factors that contribute to our success or failure. The traditional Buddhist term, pratitya samutpada, dependent origination, refers to this interdependence of everything. A flower in the forest doesn't bloom without a vast network of support from the entire universe. The human mind can comprehend only a small fraction of these influences. For the sake of argument, Let us concede that on some level we can do what we want. If I want a cup of tea, I can go to the kitchen and make one. But where did that desire come from? The truth is that I have no idea where it came from or even how it arose. The 19th century German philosopher Arthur Schopenhauer expressed this point eloquently when he wrote, "Man can do what he wants, but he cannot want what he wants." From this perspective, how can we say that we have free will if we have no idea how that will arises? Of course, on the surface, we appear to have free will. Without it seeming this way, and very convincingly so, I am not sure how the world would work. The circumstances of human life demand that we live as if we are independent free agents. However, the more I consider this so-called free will, the more difficult it is to locate or to understand it as a causative factor in my life. Like the end of a rainbow, it is always just out of reach. All I can say with certainty is that free will is not what it appears to be. There is an old Yiddish saying, "If you want to make God laugh, tell him your plans." I love this little joke because it allows us to see how ridiculous we are to think that we are in control. Yet, at the same time, it begs a very serious question. If we are not running our own lives or the world around us, who or what is? I believe this is the essential spiritual question. The founders of Alcoholics Anonymous use the term higher power instead of traditional religious personifications. In doing so, they convey both the mystery of this question and the reality of our own ignorance. Perhaps jnana is not so much in knowing the answer to this question as in the knowledge that the answer is unknowable. Perhaps the highest attainment is surrender to this unknowing. Higher power is also a term Bhagavan used on occasion. For example, he said this in response to a question about free will. Action is impelled by desire. Desire arises only after the rise of the ego. And this ego owes its origin to a higher power on which its existence depends. It cannot remain apart. Why then prattle? I do, I act, I function. Talks number 210, June 19, 1936. On another occasion, he said this to an American engineer in response to a question about work. If you surrender yourself to the higher power, all is well. That power sees your affairs through. Only so long as you think that you are the worker, you are obliged to reap the fruits of your actions. If, on the other hand, you surrender yourself and recognize your individual self as only a tool of the higher power, that power will take over your affairs along with the fruits of actions. You are no longer affected by them, and the work goes on unhampered. Whether you recognize the power or not, the scheme of things does not alter. Only there is a change of outlook. Talk number 503, August 17, 1938. Some years later, Bhagavan sheds further light on the subject in another recorded conversation. Question: are only the important events in a man's life, such as his main occupation or profession, predetermined, or are trifling acts in his life, such as taking a cup of water or moving from one place in the room to another, also predetermined? Bhagavan: yes, everything is predetermined. Question: then what responsibility, what free will has man? Bhagavan: what for then does the body come into existence? It is designed for doing the various things marked out for execution in this life. The whole program is chalked out. Not an atom moves except by his will, expresses the same truth, whether you say, does not move except by his will, or does not move except by karma. As for freedom for man, he is always free not to identify himself with the body and not to be affected by the pleasures and pains consequent on the body's activities. Day by Day with Bhagavan, January 4, 1946, page 78. The last passage reminds me that Bhagavan often compared individuals to travelers on a train. See Ramana's "Who Am I?" In this analogy, our responsibilities and concerns in life are like the baggage we carry with us. If we choose, we can continue carrying our bags even after we board the train, or we can set them down, relax, and let the train carry everything. I think this analogy hits the nail on the head regarding individual freedom. We may have little or no choice over the events of our lives, but we do have choice in how we respond to those events.